just lead in there. Now, I would like you to tell me who it was who originally came to this area, where your actual roots begin.
My grandfather, Joseph Broughton Slee, and his family used to come up to camp and hunt and fish and go up to the thoroughfare. So they bought some land, some acreage from Andy Coolin down at Coolin, right now where Russell Bishop's Marina is. Mm-hmm. Built a cabin and built a large sort of warehouse that they could store their stuff from year to year, and they would come up on the train to Priest River and then on the stage and then take a boat. They brought a boat in so they could go at the head of the lake. Then from that developed the business that they finally ended up with, a passenger and freight steamer that carried things from Coolin to the head of the lake every day, and passengers. Mm-hmm. And firefighters and whatever was needed. And anybody ordered a clutch of logs, why, they towed the logs until mm-hmm. some of the other men came in with a tug or one or two tugs afterwards. Did better with the logs.
Now, they originally came as hunters and fishers.
Well, it was a summer home for them. And by the time they'd go up the lake, and then somebody'd say, we got a lot of huckleberries and we're out of sugar, and will you bring some sugar when you come back, or will you see if we have any mail? Because you see, there was no way in to the lake or any place around the lake except to go by road to Coolin. And there were no roads on the other side, mm-hmm. either side. You came to Coolin. And then you had to go up the lake some way. There were lots of dugouts and lots of small boats, but really at first there weren't any outboard motors or anything of that type. There were one or two launches and the small steamer that they brought in on a lumber wagon with horses, team of horses. But my mother always told about the first time they came in a horse and buggy. They had to lift the buggy over the stumps. It was just a slashed out road, mm-hmm. Really an Indian trail, because the Indians were the first ones that came in, principally for the white fishing in the berry seasons and the hunting. This was sort of a campground, I guess.
How did they, you say they lifted the wagons over the stumps.
Lifted the carriage, buggy over. Well, they're not so terribly heavy.
They aren't.
Four people, I guess you could do it.
If it wasn't too heavily mm-hmm. loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I note that it was 1892 when mm-hmm. your grandfather first came to this mm-hmm. area. Was this about the same time that he purchased the property, or did that?
Well, I think he probably did that in the course of a year or two. They came up and looked the field over and camped and settled, and he decided to have property. And but they used to come, and then they'd load their things in the boat, and they'd go for camping for four or six weeks, probably.
There.
And my grandmother would come to chaperone the girls properly, and the young men came. My uncle was all right at that time. He two uncles who were very husky young men, and then Spanish-American War came along, and they went off to that. One uncle got what we now know was polio, but we didn't know what it mm-hmm. was then, and left him like FDR from the hips down. He couldn't use his limbs. So that's how he happened to design the W.W. Slee later as a boat. Probably it's the first physical therapy that we knew. He decided he felt better up here and doing things, and there was a real need for transportation on the lake, and so they designed the steamer so he could sit in it and run everything, handle all the motor parts of it and the wheel of it and the steering, and they had always somebody who fired the boiler and loaded the wood, and he would run it and did the business end of it. Grandpa kept up the other small boats. Every winter, Grandpa would build one or two small cedar rowboats or double-ender boats, and they would come up on the Great Northern was the train. They'd come up in the spring when he came, and then they'd carry him. Mr. Beardmore would carry him up on these lumber wagons. I suppose they called them lumber wagons because they were long and they did carry loads of lumber, and or freight. freight wagons, whatever they were. They brought the boats in the spring. So each spring he added a couple of boats, and sometimes during the summer he built one or two, too, up here, until pretty soon he had quite a few rowboats for rent, different sizes and different widths. He got different ideas what fishermen wanted, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now you say he built these and transported them in the spring. Where was
he lived in Spokane.
Lived in Spokane.
He had come west in 1887 and bought acreage, quite a lot of acreage, and had a farm on the north side, which is practically downtown now, and had a large barn and buggy shed and things on the back of the yard, or the place, the ground where his house was, and then he had built another house for his mother and father-in-law, and another house for a brother, just here and there around on this farm. So it was a little difficult when they began putting streets through, sometimes different shaped lots. Mm-hmm. But he had the barn and this large shed. And so in the winter he had a little stove in the shed, and as I understand it, he shaped up the boats, you know.
So you use the term double-ender.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means two pointed ends. Otherwise, we think of rowboats nowadays more or less with one straight end that holds an outboard motor. Quite often, and the other end is the prow, the pointed part.
That's something I noticed in the photographs.
It's like a canoe, more or less the shape of a canoe.
Right.
They skim through the water, they're lighter, principally for quick, light rowing.
Now, is this something that he developed, or it was a common type of...
Might have been a common type, I don't know. I imagine that he picked the idea up, maybe living... He lived in Wisconsin and in Minnesota before he came here, and all of that is lake country, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you had mentioned the Chant family who...
The Chants built this cabin that grew up in, because he felt that there wasn't a place for mother to raise us youngsters for summer tourist vacation down at Coolin. There isn't good swimming really right there. It's excellent for a marina, because it's deep, but it's muddy, and it's not sandy beach right at the main part of it. And the Chants were homesteaders who had come in and had built the cabin expecting to have a homestead and 80 acres. And in the course of the 5 years that was necessary to prove up on a homestead, they couldn't get it done. I mean, they got it done and just about proved up when Theodore Roosevelt and Governor Pinchot created the National Forest System. This was suddenly the Kinnicksu National Forest, and the homestead rights were canceled. You had the improvements were yours. You were allowed to sell them for whatever. And Grandpa felt that it would be better if we were close enough to him so we could get back and forth, but better for the children to grow up. And so Mother and Mother had this cabin then. Oh, from, I don't know, I suppose 1910, someplace in there.
And it was built,
It was built in 19, it took them from 1902 to about 1904 to really finish it, because they had to cut all the logs and build everything. They had to row up from Coolin every day to work. And they had, I suppose, a barge load of things that they had towed by some small... Apparently, Uncle Walter had this smaller Kinnicksu steamer that was able to tow quite a little bit of stuff. And that's why they decided to design and build the larger W.W. Slee as a passenger and freight steamer. And I wish I knew the measurements of it. I wish I knew a lot of the things about it. All I know is that the Union Iron Works built the boilers and the necessary things that they had to run it. And they built it in a covered shed down there at Coolin.
Now, prior to purchasing this particular cabin, you mentioned that you camped out.
Oh, well, in the summers we'd come and visit Grandpa at Coolin, and we usually stayed in his cabin, and he built another guest house behind it, between Mrs. Handy's Idaho Inn Hotel and his cabin that he had, so that there always was family guest rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine, but wasn't very good for swimming and for playing. And so one summer he decided that we'd better have a tent camp, and we'd camp up by Soldier Creek because that was nice sandy beach. And there was Mrs. Handy's farmhouse, they called it, a ranch house, where the Hunts live now. And that was a big, beautiful, rambly house. They've preserved it very much as it was. But the porch, the thing enclosed, is different shape than it used to be. Logging roads ran one or two directions through the woods behind it, and out to a road that we know now as the Cavanaugh Bay Road. Mm-hmm. And they logged and took the logs, and Art Marston had a cabin there, and he lived also at the hotel where he was. He helped Mrs. Handy with whatever had to be done in the way of a lot of the work that was necessary to run a place. Mr. Handy had died, though he was here in the very early days. Mr. and Mrs. Handy had settled in their homesteads where these things were set up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Sorg's cabin, and there were two other small cabins on the beach in Sherwood Bay, and that's all that there was up there. On the way up from Coolin, there was Dr. Knutson's cabin. I think Shoemakers bought that later, and now people by the name of Marston have it. And there were the cabin, quite a little settlement at Coolin, of course,
because mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you consider they had two stores going at Coolin, two hotels
mm-hmm.
and four saloons, or five saloons, I've never just been sure, three or four or five.
What, do you have any idea what the population might have been in Coolin at this time?
No, it would have been a very fluctuating one, coming and going, because a lot of it was logging,
mm-hmm.
logger type.
Logger-related
Lots
activities.
Of course, the main thing was Leonard Paul's store had everything in it in the world, horse collars to Hershey bars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody had to stop for their supplies there, and it was busy all the time. And the other store on the beach was a little closer to the dock, a little easier to load your stuff. And they finally, after two or three years of competition, I think that Leonard's probably won out in the sales, the mercantile things, but. They had a jukebox and piano and a couple of counters and sort of a short order. The counters that were in the store, the other store on the beach, turned more or less into, let's call it, a short order cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And a place where everybody gathered and played the music. Seems to me some of those awful records on the old phonograph, you'd hear them over and over and over all day till you thought you'd scream. But that's the way young people like music.
I don't think it's changed a lot.
It hasn't changed a bit.
In the winter time, were there very many families that continued to?
Yes, I think there were more families maybe than there are now.
No,
I'm not sure. They always had a school going. A lot of the older children, of course, went out to high school,
mm-hmm.
Boarded out. Went Priest River or in the Valley or Newport or Spokane. St. Paul's School for Girls was going in Walla Walla, and a number of the people who lived up here sent their daughters to St. Paul's because they go out in October, September, October until May.
Now, did they have a problem maintaining a teacher up here?
Well, I think it changed pretty often, and they used to say that practically always they could count on the ranger and the teacher getting married.
Yeah.
Yes, they. I remember Mrs. Ward came from around Boston, New England anyway, and she was here a year or two, though, and then she married the ranger. And then they lived here quite a little while, a long while, had three children. She was an excellent teacher. I've known several of them, and they were all good teachers, but the loneliness and the coldness, and they used to laugh about Miss Miss Ivy Fitzsimmons, who married Carl Cool, and she was always so cold all winter, and Mrs. Handy's hotel had the big wood heater in the living room, and she boarded at the hotel with the, and they'd say, I never saw anything like that new school, ma'am. There, she's always so cold, but she's working so hard to get cool. And there were another one, Marjorie McCormick, Marjorie Stockwell, married Miss Charles McCormick. I think his name was Charles. He was the Great Northern man at the depot, station agent on the Priest River. So she lasted about a year. But most of them came and they had a good winter. The way the church got started, that's so active over on the west side, is because the teachers wouldn't stay. There was nothing for them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that they particularly wanted church, but they wanted something or some place to have something. And they got the Council of Churches man in Spokane kind of interested, and he said, well, I'll furnish you church services on Sunday if you'll furnish a place to have them. And so in the summers, we started out going over there and being back in the woods, you know, just off of Kalispell, on logs. They just felled some logs, and we sat on the logs.
Now, is this on the approximate site where the
community church is? Well, it's close. It's a little further up the road and back in mm-hmm. toward the lake from the what's known as the Nordman Road now. Mm-hmm. And they made a rude altar, and it was pretty hot. If you weren't smart and wore a straw hat or carried an parasol, it was pretty hot to sit for the service, mm-hmm. but it was really pleasant, and it was pretty out in the woods. And in the fall and winter, we went to the Nordman School, and a number of times I came up with various of the ministers, different denominations, that just kept them supplied mm-hmm. with somebody for each Sunday service.
Now, I presume that you went by boat to these services.
No, by that time, by the time that the teachers had begun kind of complaining, this was, the road on the west side began to go in, you know, around mm-hmm. the 20s, 25 and 26, and in there, and they had road camps. And the road was pretty good, comparatively speaking. Mm-hmm. It was mm-hmm. not paved, but it was mm-hmm. a good road. And so we do go from Spokane straight up to that side to take whoever was going to preach. But several of us that were interested in seeing that something was done, well, mm-hmm. they thought then by establishing a church, they'd have a unit of something for meetings and parties and potlucks and things like that. And it did give mm-hmm. the teachers some little core of something that brought friends together
in the social life.
And then later, Mrs. Snyder donated the land for the church. They'd taken a population count then, and it was horrifying to suddenly discover that there were about 8,000 or 10,000 people that were using the west side of the lake.
Hmm.
Time you counted all the transient tourists at Hills and at Elkins, which were then the two original kind of resorts that there were, and people that had cabins, and those that came and went and camped. And they said, well, the ones that were kind of interested in the church said, well, we've got to have a better church thing here for the young people. They're getting a little bit out of hand. We've got to have something for them to do. So that's kind of how that mm-hmm. got evolved.
It's interesting. I would like to ask you a little bit about, was there any type of government entity in Cool and in those early days? Was there such a thing as a mayor or
no, I any? I don't recall anything. They just always, if they needed anything done, why, Leonard Paul and Grandpa Slee and Mrs. Handy coped.
They were the tacit leaders.
They were the mm-hmm. councilmen, I suppose, city council. I don't know, they always saw that whatever was needed happen.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they had a very good pavilion and dance on the weekends, on the Saturday nights, and they brought in, I remember, an orchestra called Mr. Mustard's, and there were either three or five pieces. Sax was the loudest. And they'd come in, it was 50 cents a person to go and dance, and that was down about where the post office and Russell Bishop's houses are at the moment. It was just a big pavilion. The ladies sometimes furnished refreshments, and people came by boat down then to come to dance. And then, of course, later when Hill's Resort and those things began to open up after the 30s and 40s, late 30s and 40s, why more activity began to be available on the west side.
What about, we read an account that there was a circuit judge that came through this area, or a justice of the peace who...
Must have been a justice of the peace, because Tony and Mary Limley were married. At that time, Mr. Handy was the justice of the peace. Before his death, and I don't know how he was elected or appointed or what, but I do know that he married them.
Were there any law enforcement officers in the area? Such?
I think the most enforcement of anything was done through the Forest Service. The Forest Service setup was quite large. It covered quite an area down at the south end of the lake. Lots of buildings, the boats, and because they had to be able to get men and supplies. It was a logistic problem. They had to get things up the lake where the fires were, you know. They maintained the trails, very good trails, all the way around the lake. Packed trains could go around on them. They ran one single wire phone system around on the trails. Every so often in the woods, Indian Creek, for instance, or Hunt Creek, or some of the places, you'd come on a phone, a prank, call your number of rings for what you wanted.
I also, to some extent, you've mentioned the entertainment. Who came to these dances? I would assume that the Forest Service and the CC.
Well, later, yes, the CC's, Paul's, after they built the new store, then they used the upper floor, you know, for that, to replace that pavilion. And they were very hospitable and cordial to the CCC boys, and helped them over some hitches, I think.
Well, now, if there are all those gentlemen, where were the girls to dance with?
The girls were, quite often they came down in the, after launches. By 1910, there were quite a few launches on the lake. They were always called launches in those days. And they would come down, bring girls that were up here for vacation. There were quite a few in Coolin. There were quite a few working. Mrs. Handy employed several, you know, for the hotel work. And people, Forest Service people, there were quite a few.
What about food and the supplies? Can you give me an idea?
Now, Grandma Paul made bread in the early days, and she, at the back of the store, Leonard and his mother, Grandma Paul, lived, and until he married, and she kept house for him, and made perfectly marvelous bread and rolls, and I think you kind of ordered, or you were lucky if you got there when the bread came out in the morning, and 4, 5, 6 loaves. Most people, of course, made their sourdough hotcakes and sourdough rolls. I don't think they made as much sourdough bread in those days, but they made sourdough biscuits, buns, kind of, and lots of hotcakes.
What about fresh vegetables and fruit?
They brought, I remember, cases of, after bakery bread happened, that wasn't too many years later, they'd bring cases of bread in from the bakery from, I suppose, Newport or Sandpoint, and any vegetables or meat would come in on the stage. If it was a big event when the stage came.
How frequent was this trip? the stage?
Oh, every day.
Oh.
Every day. And I don't know what days they deliver the certain things, but certain things came in, and Leonard had quite a large warehouse end of his old store, big, cool, dark, kind of under the hill. I think that was the reason the store was built, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
As much in the hillside as it was for preservation.
Right.
And then when he built the new store, of course, they included all these necessary things.
I would presume that as far as meat was concerned, people hunted
fished,
provide.
You
that.
Brought in your own, too. Or, of course, the meat market in Priest River, as I remember it, on the corner where there was a cafe, been a cafe the last few years. And you always stopped and picked up meat when you came in on the train. You see, people had to come from Spokane on the train. And mm-hmm. for a number of years, you came the night before and stayed at the St. Elmo Hotel. And then you took the horse and wagon stage
mm-hmm.
and came to the halfway house and had dinner at noon, changed horses, and came on in, got in here late evening, mm-hmm. or late afternoon.
Now, at halfway house, you would stop for your
noon
meal.
Noon meal.
How many passengers would the stage generally accommodate?
Well, I think 8 or 10. I asked Dewey Hewitt one time, and he said, well, you never knew how many were going to be hanging on.
Yeah.
It would be hard to tell. Mm-hmm. And it would depend, too, I think, on whether it was a firefighting, and they'd run to have some other wagons mm-hmm. bring them in, too. But the regular, and motor stage that Mr. Beardsmore's first one, I think, had took care of 10 to 12. There were 3 seats, as I remember it. Be 3 and 3, 9, 10 to 12, and there were running boards. And I can remember some people hanging mm-hmm. on the running boards.
Now, did Mr. Beardmore own the stage line?
7, 8. Yes, uh-huh. And then there was a Mr. Hawley who started another one. Didn't he, or was he? Anyway, Mr. Hawley and Mr. Beardmore seemed to be the two that I remember. Mr. DeWitt drove for one or the other of them and lived in the old Warren Ranch.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me a typical lunch menu that you would have at Halfway House? I'm sure there wasn't a menu as such.
It was all long table and under a sort of a tent that I remember, and I know that there was another small tent where the ladies went and rested and changed babies, nursed babies, and things like that.
Hospitality
yeah.
situation.
And then we'd eat, and it was just regular, lots of home food and passed around and dishes. I remember corn and stew and mashed potatoes, lots of mashed potatoes, and lettuce salad, old-fashioned wilted lettuce salad, mm-hmm. or coleslaw.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be the only things I can think of right off, except that Mrs. Prater was always famous for having big ginger cookies
mm-hmm.
for the children, and they seemed wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lots of raisins in them. I imagine that we had pie and cake. But I can't
surely
really.
Surely huckleberry something or other.
I suppose so.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say it was a long mm-hmm. table, or were there yeah. many tables?
No,
just
no,
one?
I think there was a long table with kind of benches.
Mm-hmm.
And slid in and out, and it was 50 cents or a dollar a meal.
Mm-hmm. Did what kind of help did she require? Was this?
It just seemed to me that she and a girl,
mm-hmm.
as I remember it, but because really, it was not too many years that I remember going that way, because then when the motor stage, when they got the motor equipment, you see, why we could go up on the early morning Great Northern
mm-hmm.
and get there about 10 o'clock or so, and 10:30 or 11 we'd leave Priest River and we'd get in here in the early afternoon, but everybody carried your lunch. You
mm-hmm.
carried a basket and passed traded pickles and everybody sampled somebody else's cookies.
Yes.
It was very friendly, so
exchange recipes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they stop like at a picnic ground, or was just
en route?
No, we
kind of
ate
en route, but at Blue Springs, I think, Blue Creek, I mean, there was good water, and we'd stop, and there were always two or three rest stops along the way, and everybody would retire behind the trees, and there'd be generally a by a creek or a spring where you could get a drink of water.
Now, the one photograph that we looked at, and you identified that as being in the midst of the smoke from the forest fires, what was the activity involved for that boat? You mentioned that it was...
Well, he carried firefighters and supplies up to the wherever the fire was, wherever the quickest way to take the pack train on with the stuff that he would unload. Or maybe that's where they'd struck a camp for the firefighters to be fed, and he'd unload the stuff. Sometimes it was at Elkins, what's now Elkins, it was just called Reeder Creek then, and was just lovely big bay, sandy beaches. And sometimes it'd be Mosquito Bay, and sometimes Beaver Creek.